Agenda item number 10, report of possible discussion on legislative update.
All right, I'm just going to kind of go over some of the stuff that has happened since our last update. You all, obviously, session started, starting January 8th. It is starting slowly, as it usually does. Matter of fact, the Senate has adopted three-day weeks until March 8th, so it'll only be in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If they need to meet on Thursday and Fridays, they'll come in. But generally, that's because for the first 60 days, committees are supposed to be meeting, and they can't really act on anything on the floor unless it's an emergency. So, you know, they'll be passing lots of resolutions for high school teams and whatnot for the next 40 or so days. Go to the next slide. You know, post-elections, you know, when we had the last board meeting, they hadn't had the elections yet. The House is obviously heavily Republican, not as much so as it was last session, but still fairly so. The Senate is split at 19-11. There's one seat still to be filled. That's the seat of the late Senator Mario Gallegos, who passed away. That special election is ongoing and should be, I think it's actually headed to a runoff. The Speaker that was in question last time we met, Representative Strauss, was reelected, which was expected. The Senate kept the so-called two-thirds rule, which was something that folks were curious about whether or not the Senate would maintain they have. And in terms of committees, the Senate has appointed theirs. The House has not, unless they did it today, and I hadn't had a chance to see it. But to my knowledge, they still haven't. They were about mid-February by the time they appointed them last session. And with regard to the Senate committees, most of the ones under which, or matter of fact, all the ones that we do most of our business under have remained fairly the same, with the same chairmanship. Go to the next slide. Major policy issues that are just even outside of BRA. The budget, obviously, the ledge has a major surplus in terms of the rainy day fund and in terms of general revenue. The revenue estimate in the last biennium was extremely conservative, such that they have a good chunk of money this time. I think that was unexpected. There's been a lot of talk about more cuts, which is odd given the surplus, but I think it's something that will be ongoing, or at least holding the line on spending and keeping it at the levels that they passed in 2011. There's also been talk of, with this surplus, providing tax relief to individuals in business. School finance and education will dominate at least a part of the session. Obviously, there's an ongoing court case related to school finance and the way that the state funds its public schools and trying to see if it's constitutional. There's also going to be talk about school choice, vouchers, things like that. And then within this, there has come up the school security issue because of what happened in Connecticut, and that's going to be something that the legislature spends a pretty good amount of time talking about. Matter of fact, they're having a pretty large meeting today in the Senate chamber about that issue. So it's something that they will talk quite a bit about. And then water, which is something that we care a ton about. There have already been bills filed to move as much as $2 billion from the rainy day fund over into what's called the State Water Implementation Fund. We call it SWIFT. And that fund would be used to fund current water development board programs like the Water Infrastructure Fund, state participation, programs that we access and will access to build major water projects in the future. This is something that has a lot of support. It has support from the leadership. And so at this time, even though there has previously been some discussion about creating a new tax or fee to fund the water plan, they're backing off that a little bit and saying instead they would just provide seed money to the plan that is in the rainy day fund, as opposed to creating a new fee or tax, which would probably have a pretty difficult time getting through the legislature. Now, there is a hang-up with regard to this $2 billion, and it's a constitutional issue, and what it relates to is whether or not spending from the rainy day fund counts against the state spending cap that is in the Constitution. That's something that they haven't necessarily figured out, but if it does, then the legislature will have to vote to bust that spending cap, and that's something that they sometimes have a hard time doing, and so that'll make that discussion a little bit more difficult. If they can find somehow that, you know, through discussions and through research, that it doesn't count against it, it'll make it easier. I still think this has a very good chance of passing because of the support for it publicly, because of the drought that we're in. I think it's just brought the issue into really sharp focus. So most folks are aware of it. Yes, ma'am.
What do we have in the rainy day fund altogether?
By the end of this biennium, it should be about $11 billion, which, and remember, it's capped, I believe, at like 12. I think is where it actually stops. It can only hold so much, but it's healthy. It's a lot healthier than it has been. Now, they're going to have to use some of that surplus revenue, not necessarily from the rainy day fund, but, you know, if you remember in the last budget, they did a lot of accounting tricks, which they tend to do. They delayed payments to Medicaid, they delayed payments to school districts until this biennium. So they will, here in the next month or so, have to pass an emergency appropriations bill to pay those bills from last biennium, and they'll have to use some of that, those surplus dollars, not, again, not necessarily from the rainy day fund, it could be from the surplus revenue investment that they use to pay some of those bills. Let's go to the next one.
Matt, you called this seed money. How much money would be required to fully fund the Texas, the state water plan? What percentage are we talking about here?
Well, the total cost is $53 billion, and that's just raw water infrastructure alone. The total cost of all the infrastructure necessary to see us through to the next planning horizon, so the next 50 years, is roughly $231 billion. But that includes water and wastewater infrastructure, pipelines, and, you know, not necessarily just the raw water. Just the raw water is $53 billion. The state's portion of that is set at $27 billion. And many believe that through this seed money, because it would fund essentially revolving loan programs that are going to be paid back over time, so it's evergreen, that $2 billion seed money might essentially fund $27 billion worth of the state's portion. That's kind of the thought process behind it, at least in the models that they've run. That's what they think. There are some.
Would Allen's Creek be part of that?
We would likely need, and John Hoffman can speak this better than I can, but I do know the city of Houston is definitely interested in accessing state participation funding, particularly deferral, my understanding.
They've been using it real heavily for this buyer.
They would want that for
all of this state participation funding that's available has been sucked up by.
So it would go down this way. Absolutely.
Good for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and quite frankly, what having money in the pot does for us is that it helps maybe get Houston moving. Obviously, our project partner is not as in a hurry on Allen's Creek as we are, because they need state participation funding, which this would supply. They also need some customer commitments, which we're working on. But that would at least check one of those boxes. We go to the next slide. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Stay on this one. Our specific issues, again, the possibility of land sale, we're working with the ledge on that.
Matt, before you get there, why don't you talk about the water development board and the new changes?
Sure. No, that's a good point. Thank you for bringing that up. In some of the funding bills related to funding the water plan, there's been some additional stuff, I would say. And that additional stuff basically reorganizes the Texas Water Development Board as they exist today. And I think the thought process is, if we're going to give you guys $2 billion a year, we need something different than what the board has right now. Right now, they've got the six-member board. The positions are voluntary. They're part-time. What they're looking to do is change it more into a permanent board like TCEQ, where you're appointed for staggered six-year terms. There's three of you, three commissioners, I guess, or water development board members. So they're trying to basically create a little bit more accountability in that board. Additionally, there's been a lot of turmoil in the executive management of the water development board here in the last couple of years, particularly as they've had a new executive administrator. At least one of the pieces of legislation, under no uncertain terms, fires the current executive administrator. It makes it clear that they have to choose a new one next year, and that new one can't have served as the EA as of January 1st of this year. So it's pretty clear that they're unhappy with things that are going on over there. And again, I think it gets to accountability, that, you know, we're going to give you guys $2 billion of the state's money, and we want to make sure that it's spent wisely. And I don't know that necessarily we have a problem with those types of changes, to the extent that it makes it better, more workable and easier to work with, more power to it. Specific to our issues that we're working on, land sale, the sale of the residential commercial, and then the additional land that we just talked about related to Costello itself, we'll be working with Senator Estes and Representative Keffer's office on those. We already are. And we want to make sure that we get an agreed to bill that all the parties can be comfortable with, so that we can maybe get something agreed to early and, you know, pass it through the process without any hiccups or problems. Water master. There will be a water master bill filed to create a water master on the Brazos. As a matter of fact, one is currently being drafted. Throughout the TCEQ process on the water master in the Brazos, the BRA remained neutral. We maintained a position of neutrality because we have customers on both sides of the issue. We have some that support it, we have some that don't. Now, as they're talking about legislatively creating one, we have been involved in discussions with the proponents of that. particularly some of the lower basin interests. And we have basically told them that we can maintain our neutrality if about four different factors are met, and I won't get into all of them, but one of the more important ones was that we would like to see included in any legislation creating a water master for the Brazos, a stipulation that individual water right holders that have, you know, a water right with multiple priority dates have to account for their most senior water first when using water. So if you have a water right that, you know, has a priority date of 1929, 1942, 1960, you've got to use the water in that order, mainly essentially that you can't wait till October and then make a call based on your 1929 when you, under the order system, already used it. So,
which is what we do now.
Which is what TCEQ does now. A water master doesn't necessarily have to do that. We would want them to do that. The proponents of the legislation are not okay with that, so we are in disagreement on that issue. And what we've told them is, at least at the outset, if a bill is filed absent that provision, we're going to oppose it. And we'll just have to, it's not that we're not still talking, it's not that we're not still having discussions, and we will continue to do so. And I would be clear that I know that we as the BRA will not be alone in that opposition in terms of other water right holders and other interests in the basin. I think this is going to be a pretty controversial issue for water right holders in the Brazos, and there's going to be parties on both sides.
And talk about the farm bureau.
Sure. And then obviously, when the Dow senior call was made, and I believe it was November, there were, the way that TCEQ handled that is they cut off all water rights 1942 and junior, but they exempted out from that water right holders who held water rights for municipal and steam electric use. And they did it out of a provision in the law that they believe gives them the authority to protect public health, safety, and welfare. Folks, so that essentially what that meant is the people that got cut off were mainly ag interest. And so the Farm Bureau has filed a lawsuit against TCEQ saying that they did not have the authority to do that, that the priority system is a simple priority system, so whatever your date is, that's your date regardless of your use. And so, you know, the way TCEQ should have done it in the eyes of the Farm Bureau was to just cut off everybody 1942 and newer, no matter what you used water for. That case is pending. I think they've got some sort of date or some sort of proceeding that they'll do early February, maybe. You know, we'll just have to see how it goes. But that's ongoing and is out there. The other issue, and this is specific kind of to what I just mentioned, priorities of usage. You know, who gets priority and limited supply? The call brought that into focus, brought that into question. If you look at the Colorado Basin, you've got the rice farmer issue versus the cities. So I think you're going to, with all this water funding talk and with all this water policy discussion, you're at least going to have some discussions related to the priority system, related to different uses of water. I mean, we've obviously got an R basin with recreation interest. You've got municipal interest. You've got ag interest. So I think there's going to be a lot of talk about that. Now, whether or not something will get done, I'm not confident, because that's a pretty big step for the legislature to take. But I guarantee you they're going to talk about it. It's going to be something that gets discussed, whether something gets done or not. I think that's all I have. Oh, well, yeah, there you go. Total bills filed, a little over 900. That was as of Thursday. So that's probably gone up since then. But I just show you that to show you that it's been a pretty slow bill filing season. Legend filing a whole lot of bills, which is nice, because it's less that to watch. But I think part of the reason for that is you've got so many new members. I think there are a lot of members that campaign on the idea that I'm going to go down there and stop stuff and not do stuff. So you've got a lot of folks that won't necessarily file bills, and that's the same in the Senate as it is in the House. So we'll see if that picks up, but again, it's relatively slow right now. So.
I
think
a normal year is about 4,000.
I think it's closer to 7,000, usually a normal year, or it has been, at least in the past.
7,000.
I don't anticipate it will hit that this session. And the bill filing deadline for anything that's not a local bill is March 8th. So that's when they'll stop filing major bills. Yes, sir.
Any of those bills, just curious, any of those bills have anything to do with term limits?
There's been a couple of bills filed related to that. Those tend to not make it very far. I'm not sure why. those tend to not get a whole lot of traction. But there's been term limit bills filed for statewide elected officials. So it wouldn't apply to the legislature. It wouldn't apply to the Senate and House. But again, I don't anticipate that'll go real far because the president of the Senate, lieutenant governor, is a statewide elected official. I don't see that getting much traction.
Any more questions for Matt? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate it.